Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 444 of the Box Hard Podcast. All the fours. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are we doing this week?
I'm great, my man. How you feeling?
Always good when speaking with you. As you already know, we're going to start here with the review part. We're going to start here in Mexico at the Ensenada, Baja California. Over here, former world champion, friend of the show, Mighty Mo, Maurice Hooker, now 28-3 with three draws, a TKO for him in round four against the overmatch Luis Luna, who's now 15-14. I believe he's been stopped about 11 times. Good to see Mighty Mo back there after quite a long period of inactivity. Also on the Friday night, but in London at the York Hall in Bethnal Green, it was live on Channel 5. Return to the ring for friend of the show, Elliot Wow. He's now 10-0. A KO for him in round 5 against Joseba Diaz, who's now 7-2. Elliot Wow going into round 5. Like I say, it was only a scheduled 6. Diaz down twice in the 5th round from body shots. Elliot Wow with that KO. Very happy for him. Super nice guy. Once again, it's a great win, actually. Also on the card, the main event, Charlie Edwards, now 19-1. His 20th career fight. Well, that's if you don't include that no contest against Julio Cesar Martinez, but that's another story. Charlie Edwards successful with his little comeback there. 19-1, a unanimous decision over 10 for the vacant WBC International Silver Bantamweight title. His opponent, George Izori, now 17-4 with a draw, former European champion. Good little win for Charlie Edwards. I think, you know, it was as kind of we all expected. He would have done well to get George's out of there. You know, Charlie's much more of a pure boxer, and that's his game, really. It was very much to be expected from Charlie Edwards. Happy for him, like I say, to return back to winning ways. He spent a lot of time away from his kid as well, and, you know, returned home to Portugal afterwards. Emotional little video he uploaded of the, you know, the moment he was reunited with his kid. That pulled on the heartstrings a bit. But he's a lovely guy, Charlie Edwards, and I'm really happy for him to be back with a win there. Moving now to the Manchester Arena in Lancashire, United Kingdom. This one was live on DAZN. It was a really, really... I don't know where I was going with that. It was decent, this card. You know, I kind of said last week, it's not fantastic. There's a few fights that I think are okay. There's a few fights I think are not so good. I was really impressed with Michael Gomez Jr. I'm going to start there, actually. He's now 21-1. A TKO for him in round 6 against Cain Baker. Now 19-11 with two draws for the English super featherweight title. Gomez as well cut in round 3 from a head clash. And then Cain Baker down twice in the 6th. Really happy for Michael Gomez. Like I say, I was quite impressed. A lot of people felt that, you know, that Cain Baker, being a slight underdog, would be able to pull off the upset win. Some people were siding with him, you know, just from the experience, the level he's boxed at. Even though he's lost at that higher level, he's got the experience. He said he'd been out in Mexico, you know, sparring hard in preparation for this fight here. And some people felt that as the rounds would progress, Michael Gomez would run out of steam and Cain Baker would be able to, you know, rack up a lot of late rounds and probably win on points. That was some people's picks, but, yeah, you know, he definitely didn't follow that script, Michael Gomez Jr. It was a war pretty much from the first round, an all-out war. It was very, very entertaining. And like I say, brilliant opener for the TV. That was the first fight on at 7 p.m. So, yeah, great stuff for Gomez to get that stoppage. Also on the card, Rhiannon Dixon, now 10-0, a unanimous decision over 10-2s against Karen Carabajal, who's now 22-2. Yeah, what an amazing story for Rhiannon Dixon. What an amazing story for her trainer, former pro Anthony Crolla, former world champion, I should say. She's gone from being a pharmacist, working in a pharmacy, right to becoming a world champion right there, all within 10 pro fights. It really is quite remarkable. Carabajal was cut over her right eye. She was down in the third. I don't think she was particularly hurt, but yeah, Rhiannon Dixon, you know, it was quite unexpected. I don't think anyone really expected her to drop Carabajal. She's not known as a puncher, Dixon. And again, I said this on last week's show. I said that one there, you'd have to back Rhiannon Dixon on points. And that is what came to fruition. I'm going to keep talking about my picks that I gave all the listeners last week, because there was a few things that came in. So yeah, that was one of them. Great win for Rhiannon Dixon. Like I say, she seems like a real nice character. You know, from the interview and stuff, she seems like quite a humble person. So it was good to see her achieve her goal there. Also on the card, Ellie Scotney, Catford's finest, now 9-0, a unanimous decision there in a unification against the undefeated Ségolène Lefebvre, who is now 18-1. She loses her 10 2-minute round contest, of course. Scotney now the new IBF and WBO super bantamweight world champion. We talk about Rhiannon Dixon becoming a world champion within 10 fights. Ellie Scotney becomes a unified world champion within 9 fights. Yeah, again, really, really, really good fight. Really good performance from Scotney. After about 2 or 3 rounds, because I think that's probably how long it sort of took Scotney to really get into a groove, she just controlled everything. She controlled the pace of the fight. It was constant pressure. She was on the front foot. She was, as you would say, Eddie, on her bleep like a cheap suit. She didn't waste much. You know, it was a fantastic way, I felt, to unify and take away an undefeated record. You know, I think it was a really, really fine performance from Scotney. And I haven't always been her biggest fan, I don't think. But I have to say, looking at her like that the other night, I'm going to say, I think she's going to be very, very, very hard to beat, because she was able to keep up the pressure against, you know, a strong, confident, bigger girl, you know, for 10 rounds. I mean, she was brilliant. She didn't fade. I think her gas tank's excellent. The only thing that's lacking is the power. You know, her punch selection's really good. She's got everything, but the only thing that's lacking is the power. But all in all, fantastic win there for Ellie Scotney. And yeah, moving to the main event, Jordan Gill now 28-3 with a draw. He was TKO'd in round 10 against Zelfa Barrett, now 31-2. Gill down twice in that 10th round from body shots. What absolute drama we had. I mean, I said on last week's show, I was really confident in Zelfa Barrett. And I've got to say, around about the midway point in the fight, I was starting to get quite worried, because Barrett was just way too negative. Boxing off the back foot, relying on timing Gill with a counter punch. You know, he was being outworked by Gill. Gill was slowly racking up rounds and building momentum as the rounds were passing by. And I saw Gill as well on the in-play odds go from 2-1 to not even evens. In the end, you know, it got to a stage where, like, I think it was 5-6 for both guys. So basically, you know, just under evens. Like, that's how much Gill had turned the fight around. I mean, he was doing so, so well. And then, yeah, the body shot, the first body shot that he gets caught with in that 10th round that puts him down, it kind of came out of nowhere. It was a left hook to the body. Down he goes. I didn't think he beat the count, because he went down in a heap. He was, you know, you could see, like, the pain, the expression on his face. He was in, you know, grimacing in pain. And he goes down. He beats the count. You know, he gets back up. Then he goes down again from another body shot. Obviously, he got up again. And He took a few too many headshots, and obviously the referee jumped in and stopped it at that point. But Yeah, it all come to an end so quickly because I, again, like I say, felt that the momentum was certainly with Gil. Zelfa Barrett as well, I should mention, after the first knockdown, went in for the kill a little bit and started to really load up, and not a lot of it was landing. And I thought, whoa, he's actually going to blow his load. He's already won this round 10-8. Maybe he shouldn't be pushing to try and get him out of there. But you know what? He did the right thing and he obviously did get him out of there. I would have liked to have known what the scorecards were at the time of the stoppage. I really would have liked to have seen them. I don't know if anyone knows that, but I'd like to have seen them because I wonder if they had Gil ahead or not, because a lot of people did have Gil ahead. But yeah, I did say Zelfa would win. I did say that I wouldn't be surprised with a late stoppage, but I did say to be safe, just back him to win by any method. So that's another correct pick. And also, I just forgot as well, Scotney points. I also said that is one worth, you know, betting on. So Scotney points, Rhiannon Dixon points, and Jordan Zelfa Barrett to win any method. So all three of them have come in so far. Moving now to the final card to mention that went down at the American Bank Center in Corpus Christi, Texas, USA. It was live on ESPN. It was live on Sky Sports. Let's touch on the undercard first. A good win for Abdullah Mason. He knocked out in four rounds Ronal Ron, who's now 14-6. Abdullah Mason now 13-0 with 11, I think, inside the distance. Also on the card, Robson Conceição. I'm really, really happy that they did give him a good TV slot. I think he was not chief support, but the one before that. So they gave him a good position on the card, you know, higher up than the likes of Abdullah Mason. Yeah, it was a good win for him. It didn't look like he was going to get the KO in the end, but he did get it in round 7. He was able to stop Jose Ortiz, who's now 15-2 with a draw. Conceição now 18-2 with a draw. Good stuff for him. And then, yeah, moving up the card once again, Ruben Villa, he's now 22-1. This is another one. I said on last week's show, Ruben Villa to win on points. He got the win on points against Christian Chacon, who's now 22-7 with a draw. It was for the vacant WBC silver featherweight title. Good win for Ruben Villa. Once again, I think he proved the other night, you know, with the way he dominated the fight, that he's a real force. And I think that he gives absolutely anyone in the featherweight division a serious run for their money. Obviously got in there with Navarrete in the past. He was slightly overmatched. Navarrete being a big guy, a relentless guy, a massive puncher. He had a little bit too much for him. But I think against anyone else, Villa will cause serious, serious issues. Moving to the two heavyweight fights. We're going to start with... let's start with Effie Ajagba. He's now 20-1. A split decision, though, over 10 rounds for the WBC silver heavyweight title. Guido Vianello, the Italian in the other corner. We called him the Italian Stallion. I don't know if you saw it, Eddie, or how much of a stallion you felt he looked like, but he's now 12-2 with a draw. Some people, though, felt that he should have won the fight. It was a bright start in the first round for Vianello. You know, he showed his quick hand speed. He caught Ajagba a few times. The hand speed was prominent, you know, very clear to see. It was certainly in Vianello's favor, and like I say, caught Ajagba a few times, definitely won the first round. Ajagba as well with a terrible second round. He was stunned in that second round from a right hook. He ended up getting saved by the bell because it was a bit late in the round, gets caught, and he was in a world of trouble there. Goes back to the neutral corner in the end. He didn't know where he was, you know. He goes back to not even the wrong corner, but actually the neutral corner. I don't know what he thought he saw over there. It certainly wasn't his corner or Vianello's corner. He was going over there for some reason. I'm going to give credit to Ajagba because he did come out in the third round and for me won that third round. Obviously, you know, Vianello did start that round fast though. He did try to jump on Ajagba as he should have done. But again, I felt he finished a bit slow and, you know, he got tagged by Ajagba a few times. So like I say, I gave the third to Ajagba. I gave Ajagba the fourth round. I thought he won that round quite big, so I had it 2-2 in the end after four. And I did think at that point, Ajagba's going to really take over. The fifth round was a hard round to score. Ajagba was definitely winning it, but Vianello finished really strong and may have just snatched it. I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I gave Ajagba the sixth round, so I had it 3-3. Once again, testament to how close I had the fight up to that point. But then I gave the next three rounds to Ajagba, so I had it 6-3 in, you know, at the end of round nine, with just one round to go, obviously, the 10th. And I should also mention as well that in rounds 8 and 9, Ajagba boxed as a southpaw. So I think he was quite effective from that stance, to be honest with you. I think Vianello was struggling to close the distance at times. And yeah, it was, you know, his jab hand was quite powerful, Ajagba. I liked what he was doing. And then, yeah, Vianello, I gave the final round. So in the end, on my card, I had it 6-4. I have to say that Vianello, you know, he's got a heck of a chin, a much better chin than I thought he had. And even though he lost the fight, I think he's a lot better than I thought he was, actually. So, yeah, he took some huge uppercuts in the fight. And like I say, I think Ajagba just about won. And, yeah, there was moments for both men. Ajagba was certainly the more hurt of the two throughout the fight, especially early on, like I say. But he came back and he had a good few rounds. He may have let the last one slip, but other than that, he did finish quite strong. So yeah, 6-4 on my card. Like I say, some people had it to Vianello the other way round and things like that. It was a really close fight. I don't know if you saw any of that, Eddie. Did you see any of that at all before I moved to the main event?
Yeah, I saw. I watched that part of the card. I also watched Robson Constant style fight too. You know, I watched that fight. We talked about the guys getting Conceição in particular not getting the nod on a couple of close fights that he had recently. His last two fights, I think, to be exact. And then this was kind of the thank you. I think this was Tim Bradley, like the hey man, look, we're gonna get you a go ahead. We're gonna get you something a little bit more clear cut where you can go and you can kind of look good and sell yourself a little bit here. And that's exactly what he did. I think he stopped him on body shots. He looked pretty good considering, even though I don't typically like the way he throws some of his shots. It's really free-handed, a little like the punches are a little fat, but he gets away with it now. And even with when he was fighting what's the guy's name? Jesus. I'm so bad sometimes with these names, which I know. Yes, Navarrete. Even though he got, actually kind of got away with it even in that fight. Those punches has to – I mean, I can't say he has to. I mean, obviously he's been successful the way he's fighting now. But if it was me and I was training him, I would try to get him a little bit – to be a little more careful with how free-handed he is, how big these shots are that he's throwing. And because sometimes it can hang you out to dry a little bit, but I guess the way he's throwing it also puts a little bit of fear in what's coming to the opponent. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, though. I think he has to be very careful with that. Although he did look good, he stopped him with a body shot. I would like to see that out of him. But, I mean, listen, like I said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so far it's worked. He's done it with one of the best guys in the division or the best guy in the division and actually got a close decision loss. So maybe I'm wrong. You know what I'm saying? But all in all, it was a good showing by him there. And the fight with the Italian Stallion and Ajagba, actually, I agree with that assessment, Joe. I thought that early on, the Italian Stallion, I'm going to keep calling that, the Italian Stallion was, he had control. I think he was a little faster, a little more, a little better mover, you know what I mean? Just all in all, a better fighter, you know, at the pace of the fight at the time, he was controlling it. And he moved up a lot better. He was a lot faster. I say a lot, but a little faster. And it was just kind of in his favor early. And then when he caught him, obviously it got crazier, you know, at that point too, where he actually had him hurt. He went to the corner. Yeah, I seen all of that. But he surprised me. And Ajagba, I honestly thought he was going to be dead in the water after that. I thought that he maybe maybe I thought maybe by middle rounds he might even get stopped because of the way the fight. I'm talking about early. I was watching it early because of, you know, him getting hurt. And then I've seen him when he fought Frank Sanchez, and he's been down before. And this guy seemed to be a pretty good puncher. But he really surprised me how he came back and took and seized control of the fight. And then even more so by switching to southpaw. And he didn't even look terrible as a southpaw, which I would have expected him to look terrible as a southpaw and not be able to throw the punches the way he should be thrown. But he actually surprised me. He did some things that I didn't expect him to be able to do. And he actually came back and won. I thought he definitely won a decision. And I thought it was a, I mean, I thought it was, you know, it was close. But I thought he won a decision. I think he controlled around the middle rounds and even to the end with the switching. It was actually a pretty decent fight, too. And the other guy, is, you know, shouldn't be ashamed. He gave a good account of himself as well. But started to get caught a little bit too much, too, at the end from a guy who's a puncher like a Ajagba, too. So it was a little bit dangerous. But he proved, like you said, Joe, to have a hell of a chin. I did not think that he would be able to take those shots from a puncher like that, that clear cut, and be okay. You know what I mean? But he did. So, you know, I was surprised from both fighters. They, you know, it was a good showing. There's a lot more excitement in that fight than in the main event, I'll tell you. But yeah, it was a good showing so far.
Absolutely. And let's get to that main event. I make you 100% right about that one. Jared Anderson, the real big baby, now 17-0, friend of the show, a unanimous decision against Riyad Mehri, who's now 32-3, over 10 rounds for the WBC, USA and WBO International Heavyweight title. I mean, there's not too much to say. Mehri barely threw a punch. You know, he came to survive. Jared looked good with his feints and his punch selection, but unusually was unable to put a dent in his opponent. You know, the booing from the crowd spoke for itself. And there was that terrible clip, Eddie, where they went, they showed a camera backstage to Jared Anderson's dog. And the dog was yawning.
Yo, I didn't even see that one. That shit, that's funny. The dog was yawning, yo. But hey, I guess the fight didn't have enough excitement, man. You know what I mean? Sometimes you got it. And it's really messed up, too, because was it really Jared Anderson's fault that it was like that? You can't really blame him. He was trying to bring the fight. He was trying to do what he had to do. But he understood, too, that this guy isn't a pushover, and he's not. He could be a dangerous guy. So he didn't want to just run it, rush in there. And there was some times that, regardless of what happened in the fight as a whole, he threw some hot shit back at Jared at times. So it wasn't like he shouldn't be concerned. And to be quite honest, you're right. He wasn't able to really put a dent in. So it looked as if he could have such a much bigger impact in the fight than he did. I think he just wasn't active and just didn't care to try. And it was like they were saying he was just basically there for a check. I don't know about that, but I guess in the end, with how many punches he threw, I guess you could draw that conclusion and not be wrong.
Yeah, not too much to discuss on that last fight, like you said, or like I said, Eddie. You know, I do think that he's probably catching a lot of abuse, Jared Anderson, from the negativity of Mehri. I don't think it was all to do with Jared Anderson, but again, if someone just comes there to be, you know, to be a punching bag. He had quite a good defense, to be honest with you. I will say he had quite a good defense. Not as much got through as you'd have thought would have got through. And also he did try and counter like here and there, and he had quick hands. You know, he was missing with the counters, but you wondered like if he caught him with one of those, what would happen? But yeah, there seemed to be no game plan. And like I say, I think, you know, it's tough luck for Jared Anderson because, you know, he's gone the distance now. After knocking everyone out, he's gone the distance now. I think that's twice in his last three. And you know, it's been not very impressive in his last three, to be honest. So I feel for him, but these things happen as you step up. But yeah, Mehri was god awful. That brings though the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the light heavyweight contender ranked number 7 in the world with the WBO. It is, of course, Mr. Willie Hutchinson. Willie, it's been a long time, my friend, but welcome back on the pod.
Yes, yes. What's happening, brother? What's happening? How are we?
We're always good when speaking with you, Willie. So we last spoke back in September of 2020, a long time ago. At the time, you were actually getting ready to fight on the Taylor Kong song undercard. The fight ended up falling through, obviously. You did end up boxing. Yeah, you did end up boxing in October, so the month after. Obviously, just a little mini recap. The year 2021 was a bit of a disaster for you, suffering your first loss. You took 15 months out. Since your return, though, you've stopped 4 out of 4. If you can, just give our listeners just a brief rundown of those past few fights since we haven't had you on.
Well, listen, I've just been putting my head down and getting on with it, you know what I mean? Just put my head down and enjoy doing what I'm doing, and that's what I've been doing, you know what I mean? And here I am, four fights in and four wins, you know?
Yeah, 4 stoppage wins. I mean, you pulled off a great win. In particular, Willie, against Ezekiel Moderna a couple fights back. I mean, we saw this guy stop Karol Itama on that Beterbiev Yard undercard. You managed to stop Moderna. Right. And, Moderna as well. Just another note on him. He just boxed in February in Russia against an undefeated Russian kid. Lost by majority decision, which I think speaks for itself.
He did, yeah.
It was a great win for you, my friend.
Yeah, it was a decent win. But listen, we push on, don't we? We push on. I've got a good fight coming up on the 1st of June. And I'm just looking forward to that, you know what I mean?
All right, before we move on to that, just give me a couple words, though, on your most recent win. Martin Halbern, clinical performance, 2 rounds. No one saw it coming that early.
No, they didn't. I thought I boxed very, very well. It was good to come out with a good knockout, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But yeah, let's move on to that next one. As you say, June the 1st, it all goes down in Saudi Arabia. You'll be boxing as part of that crazy Beterbiev Bivol undercard. The whole card itself, it is unbelievable. The whole card itself has got to be one of the best cards for many, many years. First question, how excited are you to be a part of that card?
Oh, very excited. Very excited, very motivated. And listen, it's all in God's hands. Everything's getting took care of and I'm very excited and happy and I'm ready to rock and roll, you know what I mean?
And I've seen that, you know, your most recent social media posts, you look somewhere sunny. Forgive me for not knowing where you are, but where are you?
I'm in Nigeria.
Really?
I'm in Nigeria, doing camp over Nigeria now, yeah.
Wow. I didn't expect you to say that.
I'm running the Nigerian mountains.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Wow, that's stopped me in my tracks. I mean, why?
Yeah. because I believe it's good training over here. We've got some good Nigerian sparring partners. And obviously my coach, Mirko Wolf, he's half Nigerian. So he's got me over here. I'm staying in one of his places over here. And that's why we're here.
Oh, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. That's got to be a first. How long, Willie, have you known that you'd be fighting Craig Richards? When were you first told?
I'm told the night of my fight.
Right.
3 weeks ago.
Right, okay. That's interesting, because I interviewed Craig Richards quite a while back now, actually. And I remember saying to him at the time, I said, how do you think this fight's going to go down between Ezra Taylor and Willie Hutchinson? And he said, is that fight definitely happening? And now I look back, I thought to myself, maybe because he knew that you guys would be fighting, but that was probably a long time before 3 weeks ago. So maybe it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a coincidence, I think.
Okay. And what do you make of Craig Richards, Willie? How good is he in your opinion?
I think he's very good. I think he's a very good, strong, durable opponent.
Will he be the best opponent you've faced as a pro?
Yeah, probably as a pro, yeah.
And how do you see the fight unfolding, my friend?
I've seen him knocking him out very early.
Really? Very early?
Yeah, I feel the fight won't go past 3 rounds.
That's a mega statement. So that's obviously much better way to beat him than the likes of Bivol did. the likes of Buetsi did.
That's right. That's right. And on June 1st, everyone will see what I'm all about.
And Willie, I want to ask you this, and I want you to think before you answer this one. Do you feel that you need to be at your absolute best to guarantee a win like that?
I've got to be at my absolute happiest to get that win, more than anything else. And if I'm happy, I'll be at my best.
I like that answer. I like that answer. Coming down to my last couple of questions, Willie, we really have flown through things. You're part of Queensbury's team of five. It's obviously, you know, best of five on the night, so whoever gets to three wins first out of Queensbury or Matrim will win that night. How confident are you that Queensbury will win at least three of these fights? And also, which of the other four fights are you most confident for Queensbury victories in, aside from your own?
What do you mean?
I understand that was very, very complicated the way I asked that question, but basically, if Queensbury are to be triumphant on the night, they would need to win at least three of the five fights. You are pretty sure that you're going to win your one. So there's four others. Which of those four others are you most confident in that Queensbury will get the job done?
If you want to know the truth, I'm focused on myself, because that's first and foremost is me. And then, after me, I think they're all very, very tough fights. And listen, I can't say anything like, you know what I mean? I just know that Frank Warren will come out on top, and I'll just have to leave it at that, you know?
Okay, but yeah, no, you're right. They're all exceptionally well-matched fights. And it's going to be a fantastic night of boxing again, June the 1st. Just finally, before we wrap things up, Willie, it's great to have you back on, of course. If you want to sign out with a little closing message to the listeners all the way from Nigeria, take it away.
Yeah. Listen, to everyone who's listening to this podcast just now, God loves you. He loves me and he loves you too. And that's what we're going to do.
There we go. Listen, Willie, as always, the pleasure's mine. Thanks for your time. Best of luck out there in Saudi. And we'll speak sometime after the fight.
Let's do that, yeah.
God bless, mate. Take it easy. Bye.
See you, bro. See ya. Bye-bye.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with that massive undercard announced for Bivol Beterbiev. We did just speak to Willie Hutchinson, so obviously he's boxing on the undercard against friend of the show, Craig Richards. Also on that mammoth undercard, June the 1st in Saudi Arabia, we will see Daniel Dubois stepping in the ring with Filip Hrgović. We will see Zhilei Zhang stepping in the ring with Deontay Wilder. We will see Nick Ball back in the ring with Raymond Ford, boxing for a world title again after obviously boxing for one last time out against Ray Vargas, that fight ending in a draw. We're also going to see a really good middleweight contest between Hamza Shiraz, the undefeated Brit. He gets in with the undefeated Austin Amo Williams. So it's a massive undercard. It's such a crazy, crazy card. You know, Matrim's five against Frank Warren's Queensbury's five. And it's, you know, it's competitive. Not just the fights, not just the promoters, you know, and the main event, obviously, Beterbiev and Bivol. It's just an insane card of boxing. I cannot wait at all for it. I'm going to come to you, Eddie. I really, really don't want us to talk about this at length at all. But is there a... Well, I'm just going to come to you for one fight, or two fights, but don't give me a long answer, just give me a pick, and we'll obviously talk much more in depth when the time comes. But what are your feelings right now? If you had to pick a winner, give me one sentence, or one word if you like. Zhang against Wilder, who wins?
Oof. I'm going to say Wilder right now. Even though Zhang is tough, I'm going to say Wilder right now. And I know I'm like, what? Wilder? I still believe in that wild ass right hand. And and I just don't know if Zhang will be able to stand under that. Even Zhang, even though he shows a great chin.
Okay. And you'll probably be interested to know that the early odds have actually been released and Deontay Wilder is the underdog in that fight. So that is a real shock, in my opinion. And also, Daniel Dubois against Filip Hrgović, Eddie.
Ooh, that, when I heard that, I said, ooh, but you couldn't hear me, obviously. That is,
I could. Oof. I heard you say it.
Oh, you did? Oh, my fault. Oh, man. Oh, damn. Early, I'm going to say Dubois. I know everything is telling me to say Hrgović, but right now I'm going to say Dubois. I think he's strong enough and solid. It's going to be difficult, even though Hrgović is busy. I think he walks into one of those shots, man, it could be over quick.
There we go. Well, again, Dubois is the underdog there as well, so some good money to be made in that double. Moving on, what else have we had announced? Tyler Denny stepping in the ring with Felix Cash. That one to go down on June 22nd at the Results World Arena in Birmingham. That obviously is a defence there of Denny's European title. Few fights on the undercard as well. We're going to see Cameron Vong against Jordan Flynn. We're going to see Lewis Crocker as well stepping in with Connor Walker. And also a battle of the two undefeated ladies, friend of the show, Shannon Ryan, stepping in with Newark's Emma Dolan. So, yeah, decent little card there from Matchroom. That is about it, though, for the news. Let's move now to the preview part of the show. I'm delighted to say that we're going to start in Zagreb, Croatia, at the KC Drazen Petrovic over here for the WBA Interim and the WBC World Welterweight title. Over 10 twos, friend of the show, Ivana Habazin, 22-5. She steps in with Kinga Magyar, who is 14-4. Magyar, obviously Hungarian fighter, with, well, she had an awful start to her career. This is quite a staggering one here, Eddie. She lost 4 of her first 5 fights, but since then, she's gone on to rack up, if I'm not mistaken, 13 wins in a row. So she has got some serious momentum going into this fight here against Ivana. Obviously, fun fact, you know, I've walked you to the ring on 2 occasions, and we both walked Ivana to the ring when she boxed Clarissa Shields. So we've got a soft spot for Ivana, of course, and we will be, you know, hoping she can pull it off and become world champion once again. Moving now to the York Hall Bethnal Green. This one goes down on Saturday at York Hall Bethnal Green. It's going to be live on TNT. Let's touch on the undercard first. We're going to see Andrew Kane. He's currently 10-1. He steps in the ring with Darwin Martinez, who's 8-19 with 2 draws. Andrew Kane still hasn't boxed since that loss last time out in what was a fantastic fight against Iron Up Baluta. He lost there, he lost his O. It was a mad, mad fight. He had Baluta down twice in the first. He was down himself in the 9th, and Baluta was definitely the rightful winner. Like I say, gets in with Darwin Martinez. Darwin Martinez has been stopped 3 times in his 19 losses. We know that Andrew Kane's a big puncher, but this guy seems to kind of, you know, know his way around the ring and is pretty good at fiddling his way to a decision. He did lose on points over 6 rounds to Charlie Edwards, but having said that, Chris Balk did stop him in 3 rounds. He's also gone 8 rounds with Masood Abdullah, went the distance there, went the distance with Brad Strand. Like I say, he's a decent fighter. I would expect this one to probably go the distance. We'll have to wait and see. Again, I'd like to see the odds on that to go the distance. What else do we have on this card? We have the return to the ring for Henry Turner, 12-0, a prospect I'm quite high on. I think he's a good fighter, seems to be improving fight by fight. It's for the WBC International Silver Super Lightweight title. It's over 10 rounds. He steps in with Michael Mendoza, who's 16-4 with 14 KO wins and 3 KO losses. So again, this one probably not going to go the distance. You know, this guy either knocks you out or gets knocked out. So yeah, he's a Colombian fighter, and he's 23 years of age. Should be an exciting one. Don't blink there. Talking of not blinking, also on the undercard, Aloys Yumbi, 6-1 with 6 KOs, the young heavyweight. He's only 21 years of age, which is just crazy. He looks a hell of a lot older. He's back in a cruiserweight contest. It's over 8 rounds. Obviously, Yumbi trained by Ben Davis, and he steps in with the much more experienced Pablo Farias, who's 32-6 with a draw. He's got 17 KOs to his name. He's been stopped on 4 occasions. He's only 5'9", which is small, obviously. But apparently, this fight's at cruiserweight, but he's boxed at heavyweight, this guy, the Argentinian Pablo Farias, like I say. Just looking for his record here and the people that he's been stopped by. I was going to say, I don't know who they are, but having said that, once upon a time, this looks really bad, but he got stopped by Arthur Abraham back in 2012. That one was at super middleweight, so he finds himself up here against the much bigger man in Yumbi. You'd expect this one to end within the distance for sure. So yeah, again, like I said, don't blink. And again, I want to say don't blink again, because you just never know. We're going to see something for the first time on Saturday night. It's for the vacant EBU European lightweight title. We're going to see the knockout machine, Sam Noakes, 13-0. He was on the show last week. He's got 13 KOs. He's never gone the distance. He steps in with Yvonne Mendy, who's 48-6. He's never been stopped. He's got one draw as well that I should mention. And he's been around the scene for a hell of a long time. I think Sam Noakes knows, you know, this guy is a real tough guy. But he did say, you know, that York Hall ring is pretty small. And I don't think he's going to be able to stay away from, you know, from his punches. Obviously, we remember when he beat Luke Campbell, took his O. Luke Campbell come back and beat him back. His last kind of big fight was that fight on the Fury Chisora 3 undercard against Dennis Baranchik, and he lost that one there. But again, prior to that, and always really, he's been a solid fighter back in the day, you know, boxing the likes of Victor Postol. He's been around the scene for a long time, very, very experienced, and I'm expecting a few rounds. I'd be quite surprised if Sam Noakes goes in there and takes his head off within a few rounds. I really would. So I'm very intrigued for this fight here on Saturday night. And like I say, either Sam Noakes is going to go the distance for the first time, or Yvonne Mendy is going to get stopped for the first time in 55. It will be 56 fights on Saturday. So all the best to Sam Noakes. He's from Maidstone. His hands are made of stone, as I like to say. Moving now to the Magna Centre in Rotherham, Yorkshire, United Kingdom. Return to the ring for friend of the show, Huey Fury. He's been out the ring for 2.5 years, if I'm not mistaken. He's back in a 6-rounder. He's 26-3. He steps in with Konstantin Dovbychenko, who we know is an extremely, extremely tough heavyweight journeyman. He's 10-15 with a draw, but he has really been match tough and, of course, has never been stopped. As far as I'm aware, you can't bet on this fight just yet, but I'd like to know if there are, you know, if there are going to be odds from some bookmaker or another, because Huey Fury to win that fight on points, I would say, is free money. But yeah, Konstantin Dovbychenko, we know that he upset the odds against Matty Harris last year, but then he didn't look too great at all when he lost to Jimmy TKV. I was at that fight back in February. Yeah, you know, Moses Itauma, he's been on the receiving end of his punches. He couldn't get him out of there. Jose Lardu and various other fighters have struggled with Dovbychenko, the Ukrainian based in Camden Town, London. All the best though to Huey Fury. Like I say, he's had some really hard fights, Huey, over the years, and I think he was thrown into some of these fights probably a bit too soon, and he's been plagued with injuries. He's really, you know, found it hard to pick up the momentum, especially in recent years. Like I say, 2.5 years without a fight. In that time, he was scheduled to fight Michael Hunter, I think, more than once. It could have been 2 or 3 times they had that fight set up, and each time Huey Fury pulled out with more injuries. Yeah, it's been a real shame because obviously I'm going to assume he's probably 29 now, you know, not long till he turns 30. And we keep saying, we've said it for such a long time, he's a baby, he's still young, he's still got years and years and years and years in the game. But I think, like I say, when you don't box for 2.5 years and all of a sudden you go, whoa, he's about to turn 30 soon, where'd the time go? Well, that's the problem, because if you're not fighting, then the time does fly, because people look again, oh yeah, Huey Fury, what's he been up to? Nothing. But what's happened? The days have been going by, the years have been going by in this case. He's getting no younger, and if the opportunity is going to come for him to become a world champion, which of course would be his goal, then it needs to come pretty soon, because like I say, the way things have been going for him, It's not looking good. It's not looking good. But all the best to him. Very nice guy. Moving to the final card to mention. It goes down on pay-per-view Saturday night at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, USA. It's on DAZN pay-per-view, by the way. Let's touch on the undercard just briefly. And I really do mean briefly. We're going to see John Ramirez stepping in with David Jimenez. We're going to see Charles Comwell stepping in with Gustavo Vittori. We're going to see Beck the Bully, Bektamir Melikuziev, stepping in with the undefeated, I think he's 22-0, Pierre de Bombay. We're going to see a good fight. Well, I say it's going to be a good fight. Arnold Barboza Jr. against Sean McComb. It's an interesting fight, but it has the makings of what could be a really boring fight. I think Sean McComb can be quite negative. He's very much a back foot boxer from what I've seen of him. And Barboza, I don't think he's a massive puncher, even though he did really well to get rid of Zolisani and Dongany. I think this will go the distance. Barboza will probably win. But again, I don't know if it's going to be a good fight to watch. I like the fight. Like I say, it's an interesting one in terms of where both guys are at. And, you know, the winner is in a really good position. But I don't know if the styles are going to gel, you know, for a good fight. And then, yeah, going straight to the main event, Eddie, I'm going to come to you straight away. Devin Haney, 31-0, defending that WBC World Super Lightweight title over 12 rounds against Ryan Garcia, 24-1. We're finally getting it on Saturday night. Many people felt that this fight might fall through. There was a lot of, and there still are a lot of, really crazy tweets that we've seen from Ryan Garcia. It's made a lot of people question if he's okay mentally. You know, some of the tweets are crazy. Just earlier on this week, he met some girl that is like an OnlyFans girl, and she tweeted saying, oh my God, I just met Ryan Garcia. Then she tweeted saying, oh my God, Ryan Garcia just got me pregnant. Then he responded saying, oh my God, you wasn't supposed to tell anyone, but it's true, guys, I got her pregnant. They only met each other this week, as far as I'm aware. It's just like a load of games. And I feel like I can imagine Ryan Garcia being the mastermind behind these silly tweets, you know, thinking that he's messing with people, you know, just for reactions. But I feel like the joke is on him. I like Ryan Garcia, Eddie, but I can't quite understand this. I know that was it George Kambosos with the quote, you know, the art of deception. Well, he's deceived absolutely everyone here. And much worse than Teofimo Lopez, when they said he wasn't all the ticket and he went in there and beat Josh Taylor and said, ha ha, I fooled you all. Well, Ryan Garcia, if this is just an act, then boy, oh boy, he's got me fooled and everyone else fooled much worse than Teofimo could have ever done.
Yeah, well, I think more people's watching too. I mean, Ryan Garcia is a pretty popular kid. You know, aside from the way he looks and just in general, his following, it's just, he's got a lot of eyes on him. So being able to, I guess it's like acting, you know what I mean? And I think we need to understand to a degree that a lot of these young guys are in the public eye and they want to build a persona, and maybe it's people I don't know if his people were behind this, but maybe his people are saying, you know, you want to be a bit controversial to drive more fanfare. And also maybe even to some degree get Devin Haney to kind of drop his guard a little bit, which I don't think is possible. When you're at this level, you're not going to look at anything that somebody does, you know, and take it as, oh, they're going to be lesser when I get in the ring room. It's just, you know, the night of the fight, the nerves, the expectations, all of these things are going to always keep you on your P's and Q's. So, yeah, maybe he can try that and think that that may make, you know, Devin Haney drop his guard or make people in general think that he's a little crazy. But at the end of the day, you're still going to have to bring your A game, and you are facing a high-level boxer, and they're a guy you know as well. So it's not like you don't understand what you're getting yourself into. Now, of course, they both improved. They're both older. They're you know, really talented young fighters, and they're big stars, you know, right now in the boxing game. So at the end of the day, I'm just looking forward to the fight coming, you know, taking place. And both of them actually, which I don't think that Devin Haney is going to come in there with anything on his mind other than winning the fight. So that's one thing. I mean, you know, people, and also I think the same thing for Ryan. I think he's doing all of this to try to maybe throw people off or just sell more tickets. I don't know. But the reality of it is when it's time to go in there and fight, you got pressure on you. You got a lot of things going. You don't want to lose. You want to keep the money rolling. You're going to come in there focused and ready to fight. So all of these tweets and all of this crap, all this bullshit that's going on outside of it, I don't even pay attention to. When I was fighting at that level, I didn't really pay attention to what I was hearing. You know, when I was about to fight Vladimir, they showed him in a suit and he looked a bit extra bulky, like they might be talking about maybe he's a little out of shape. I'm in my mind, I'm thinking, why would somebody even mention that? You know what I mean? These guys don't, they don't do that. You understand what I'm saying? You're not going to get in the ring with anyone, let alone another high-level guy, and not be 100% prepared, unless you had some other issues going on in your life that you couldn't control. But, yeah, I'm just looking forward to the fight. And, you know, aside from all that bullshit that goes on outside, I think it's going to be a hell of a fight. Very interesting. I think Devin Haney is probably the obvious – well, not probably. He's the more seasoned boxer. His resume is a bit better, obviously, too, even though Ryan has fought Tank and he fought a few other guys. He's still, you know – and he was on a losing end of that one fight there with Tank. So I think, you know, it's Devin's fight to lose. However – do not overlook Ryan Garcia. He's an explosive puncher, and he has good boxing ability. He's a little raw. Don't get me wrong, but that he does have possibly that fight-changing type of explosive power. So, you know, you can't go to sleep on him and think that in an instant the fight won't change. You know, Devin could be winning all the way up till he gets caught and then something changed, you know, and obviously that changes the tide of the fight, and you never know where it goes from there. So, interesting fight. I'm looking forward to it. I'm definitely going to be watching shit. I might even be in the house for it. You know, I was talking to Ann about going to it, so we might be even in the house for it. So, yeah, looking forward to it, man. This is a good matchup, and I can't wait to see it.
Well, there we go. I don't have too much to add to that, to be honest. Obviously, these two guys know each other extremely well. They went 3-3 against each other in the amateurs. That was a long, long time ago, but it has to be mentioned. We all agree, I'm sure, that Devin has took to the pros much better than Ryan has, I think. That's no knock on Ryan. I think Ryan, you know, it's not like he's amateur-like, but I think Devin Haney, you know, especially last time out against Regis Prograde, way he boxed there, he seems like he's you know, he's got his own fighting style now, and it's fully effective, and it's a bit of a, you know, tough task to conquer, you know. And we've seen many guys try now, and I think he's really been perfecting it more and more in recent, you know, in recent fights especially. And he looked so good last time out, you know, and you know, they say you're only as good as your last fight. He looked amazing last time out, whereas Ryan wasn't quite as impressive trying that shoulder roll stuff and all the rest of it. So yeah, I would have to side with Devin. Some people are even saying they wouldn't be surprised to see a stoppage. I think if I was pushed, I'd probably still say it's going to be Haney points, because I don't think he's, you know, a massive puncher. He also hasn't really knocked anyone out of any significant level. But yeah, I do hope that Ryan is okay mentally. You know, obviously we saw the two guys do a face off earlier this week, and Devin pushed, you know, Ryan Garcia in the sort of face, and then Ryan Garcia goes on Twitter and tweets, "Devin touched me without my consent. I'm suing him for putting his hands on me, and I identify as a woman, so he touched me as a grown man and he hit a grown woman, and I'm LGBTQ+, so now it's a hate crime." And you know, there's trolling, and then there's just, I don't know, delusion. And some of the things he said, honestly, obviously you haven't been paying as much attention to it as I have, Eddie. I was actually in one of his Twitter conversation things, the Twitter space things yesterday. And, you know, he's in there almost every day doing these big chats with people that join. And, you know, people are asking him questions, and just the way he's talking. At first, I thought maybe someone is on his Twitter page sending these crazy tweets. It wouldn't be the first time that's happened. Someone else tweeting on someone else's page, all of this random stuff. But you know, it's actually him. And you know, like I say, you can hear him, you know, saying the maddest things. So yeah, I hope he's fully focused. There's pictures of him that's been circling, of him drinking, being in nightclubs. And it's, you know, it's a terrible look. You know, Devin Haney has been locked in. And like I say, I'm going to say Haney to win the fight, probably on points, but hopefully it is a good one. The hype and the build-up has certainly been entertaining, you know, if nothing else. I don't like the fact that both guys are now saying they're going to go in there and try to literally kill the other one. It's gone a little bit too far with that kind of stuff, you know. Even Bill Haney has been saying that Devin's going to kill Ryan. If he dies, he dies. All that, you know, that Ivan Drago type of nonsense. We don't want to see none of that. We just want to see a good fight. Hopefully it will be one on Saturday night. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, that man being the world-ranked light heavyweight contender, Mr. Willie Hutchinson, a man that will be part of that huge undercard on June the 1st in Saudi Arabia. In part two, we brought you the news. We just wrapped up the preview part. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 444 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the light heavyweight contender himself, Mr. Willie Hutchinson, speaking to us all the way from Nigeria. Incredible stuff. All the best to him in his upcoming fight. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. Do remember that if you want to improve your below-the-waist hygiene, to visit www.manscaped.com and use that promo code BOXHARD for 20% off plus free shipping. Please use that code. That is about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.